Okay, this is Catherine Austin Fitz. It's Thursday, February 12th, 2009, and welcome to the Solari Report. I'm really delighted you could join us this evening. Tonight is our precious metals update that we want to do once a month with Franklin Sanders, and Franklin is joining us. I'm over at his top of the, or next to his top of the world farm in Tennessee. Franklin, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay. Well, as we've been talking about coming onto the call, we've had a very exciting week this week. I'm going to start with money and markets and talk a little bit about the stimulus package and what it means in both the markets and the world. And then we're going to Franklin and I are going to go into the precious metals update and also cover the most common questions that Franklin gets from people interested in buying precious metals. And then we want to talk about our wonderful, one of my favorite comedies in the world, Trading Places. So that's our agenda for this evening. Okay, so money and markets. The House and Senate have reached agreement on a stimulus package, $789 billion, to be passed tomorrow and signed by the President on President's Day. That's next Monday. What we've done is we've posted a list of the report by Associated Press of the items in the bill or in the agreement, and you can take a look at it up at the top of the blog. They add up to about $780 billion, so there's about $82 billion that hasn't been explained. So this is just a preliminary report. If you take a look at it, essentially there's no the first thing I thought when I finally saw where this came out was I thought of a line from a poem by Yeats that was written about the period right before World War II. He said, the center cannot hold. And what we've seen for the last 20 years in America is a real effort to try and present by the national administrations, by the presidents, by the campaigns, a vision of America that that everyone can buy into. And so we have the banks and the people buying into one common vision. Now, the vision always says one thing and does another. But this time we've got something that really basically keeps things going for a little bit and doesn't really say, here's my vision of America. It doesn't say, here's America's future, here's what we our role in the world is, here's how the different people and constituencies in America can participate in this economy and this civilization. There's no picture. There's no clear presentation of where we're going and where we all fit into that. And that's because this administration can't afford to put forward an honest picture, and they can't take care of the cash flows that the bankers want. And then build something that everybody else wants. So we've reached the point where the veil is coming down. Now, they've tried to put a good face on it, but essentially what this bill does, the last Solari report, we talked about the cash flow breakdowns between county and state government out in California. We're seeing similar kinds of things happening around the country. What this bill does, whether through the $8 billion for the states, for different money for transportation, for extension of unemployment benefits, and money for Medicare and Medicaid. What it's basically doing is keeping the cash flows going, I think, on that intergovernmental game and keeping things floating along through the end of the year. There's no picture of, okay, when we get to the end of the year, what's going to happen? I mean, what are all these unemployed people going to do who don't have new jobs? There's no vision of how we're going to do that. Certainly, if you look at the employment that the transportation or the energy programs are going to generate, it's not enough to pick up or to pick up that kind of employment. So there's no vision of sort of what we're all going to be doing and why this can work as a whole, after that period. Now, Franklin has a terrific article in his last Money Changer, and it's called Likelihood. And I asked him to come on early during the money and market part because I want him to give you a summary of what he says in that and then describe how that fits into what the major message of what this stimulus package means to all of us. So, Franklin, why don't you tell them about this fabulous article?
Well, the primary thrust of the article is that when you plan for the future, which, of course, investing is, that you have to plan for the greatest likelihoods, not the least likely things to happen. And the great discontinuities of, you know, the Industrial Revolution, for example, or the war between the states, or the New Deal, those are great discontinuities. Those are big breaks with the past where, after they occur, there is a reorganization of society, not necessarily immediately, but the reorganization is there in embryo, and it's going to change the way everybody relates to everybody else. And the main thing that we're dealing with, and what we're seeing right now, although we're only seeing the little details of it, and so it's hard to get a picture of the great big picture and what's going on, there is a shift in the trend of human affairs that goes back 400 years or more that is occurring. There's, you know, when we talk about investing, we always say, well, what you have to do is align yourself with the primary trend. The primary trend is the tide that's going to carry for 15 or 20 years and will carry an investment up, or it might be carrying it down. But the main thing is you've got to align your investments with the primary trend. For instance, 1982, the primary trend changed in stocks, and it turned up, and they went up for another 18 years until 2000. So that primary trend is extremely important. Well, this primary trend that I'm talking about is far longer than that, and it goes back to the rise of the nation state, which began about the middle of the 16th century. And as that rise of the nation state took place, what it did was suck power to the center. Centers, everything became more and more centralized. If you look at the beginning of that period, you have no national economies in much of any sense at all. And you have all local and primarily self-sufficient economies. And you have nations that really were just aggregations of localities, of local principalities. And as the last 400 years have taken place, there's been a shift, first of all, away from the state being identified with loyalty to a person. You know, Louis XIV could say, I am the state, l'état c'est moi. And that was true, because when the army took an oath, they took an oath of loyalty to Louis. They didn't take an oath of loyalty to France or to a constitution. But after the time of monarchs, what happened was the state became a corporate entity, an abstract corporate entity that was not identified with any person. So we have that centralization of power, power flowing away from individuals, away from localities, away from local groups like guilds and so forth, to the center. And the state has solidified that power and concentrated that power more and more in itself until you get to the point about 1990 when the Soviet Union collapses and there's only one empire left standing. There's only one great central state left standing, and that is the American Empire. And now what we're in the process of seeing, and it's very, very slow because these are long-term things taking place, it's a very, very long-term trend, but what you're seeing is the rounding top, the peak of that trend, and the United States, of course, I think the crisis that we're seeing now is the point at which that rounding top bends enough that it breaks the trend line and begins to go down very, very fast. So what we'll see in the balance of our lifetime and for several hundred years to come is power flowing away from centers, away from nation states, to back to localities and back to individuals. And, you know, it has wonderful implications over the long term for individual freedom and growth of individual control over our own lives. But in the meantime, there are going to be a whole lot of bumps in the road getting there.
Right, because these guys have very powerful technology with which to centralize.
Oh, absolutely.
And my interpretation of the stimulus package is if you look at the fundamental economics of the system, it's exhausted. You have spent huge amounts of borrowed money to keep the thing centralized. And so you can't afford to keep it centralized in the same way. You can't afford to have everybody in the Titanic with you. And so what they've done is they've pumped out enough cash flows to sort of hold a lot of things together for another year. But if you look at where they're spending the money, they're not spending something that will rise and carry, all boats here.
No.
And so literally what they've done is they've protected the insiders. They're clearly, working to build the infrastructure to kind of go where the elites want to go. And then the rest, they've really obfuscated the message to the rest of us, which is you're on your own, and good luck, and here's some hope, and good luck. And they've sent a message both to the financial community and the globe, which says, there's no there.
Right.
I mean, there's no rabbit to pull out of the hat this time. And so you're going to have to get a fundamental reengineering of how governance works. And I think the message to every one of us is, if you're not scrambling to, get going with the primary trend, you need to not worry about the stimulus package. This package can't help us. We need to get decentralized. And
sure.
Right. And that, if you haven't seen... last week I published two articles on the blog. One was called Financial Coup d'Etat, which is, I think, when something's going down, what you do is you get all the money out before it does. And if you look at the bailouts and the financial stability plan, which is the latest round of bailouts, that's really what we're looking at. We're looking at extraordinary provision. If you look at sort of the latest total of guarantees, credit, and money, we're headed towards $10 trillion. I think somebody estimated today $9.5 trillion. And if you look at that amount of money, you're basically, it's the amount of outstanding debt, when this all started at the federal government. So you're talking about mammoth amounts of paper money. Just, and it doesn't make any sense. Somebody in the King Report estimated the other day that you could pay off all the mortgages in the country. With this amount of money. So the first part was financial coup d'etat. The second part was called rethinking diversification. And one of the things we talked about was really going from a world where you're doing everything with corporations, including investing with corporations. You're investing in stocks of corporations, and diversification is seen as, diversifying into different kinds of corporations as opposed to the kind of diversification we need, in the post-stimulus world, which is we need to diversify everything, all of our assets, our life, how we do things. We need resilience. We need to be not dependent on a few corporate systems, and that's every aspect of our lives. And I know we're going to talk about it more when we hit Trading Places, but I've made that shift, Franklin, was one of the people I looked to help me understand how to make that shift. There are lots of people who've making the shift. And one of my goals with the Solari Report is to really help you make that shift in a way that's a lot less painful than my shift and Franklin's shift. Anyway, before we finish up on money and markets, I wanted to read you one quote from Bill King, because I continue to be focused on our schedule this year. We've passed through the inauguration. We've gone through a period. Now, we'll get a bounce. My prediction is we'll get a bounce next week. The stimulus package will be signed. There'll be lots of big PR. There'll be an effort to push gold down and the stock market up. But going back to Franklin's primary trend, after we go through the whatever honeymoon there is to be had, we're coming into the March and April dates that I've talked about before. March 15th, we have corporate tax dates, and we have big disclosure dates in March around that date. Then April 15 personal tax dates, and I think that's going to be those 2 months are going to tell us a lot about how deep this recession is going to be and how bad. And with that in mind, I just wanted to read one quote from Bill King this week from his newsletter. Here's something for everyone to contemplate. The S&P 500 is trading at over 20 times, expected earnings. Is that undervalued? Is this a level at which new bull markets develop? At the top in 1929, the S&P composite PE was 19 times. The only reason people brave that stocks are undervalued is when they compare it to the bubble years of the past decade. Haven't people realized that the history that they have used in their models is far too short and the data is derived from unnaturally jiggy periods? John Maudlin notes, with 65% of S&P 500 companies reporting, that means the rest haven't reported, their Q4 earnings were negative $3.14 a share. That's the first time they've ever reported a negative for a quarter, ever. But now that 78% have reported, losses are now a staggering $8.50 a share, and it could get worse. The write-offs this quarter are just huge. So if you take historical S&P or stock market multiples, and then you, during this kind of recession, and you multiply them times the true expected earnings, we could potentially look at a much more significant market drop. So I just want to keep reminding everybody during this year, I'm a big chicken, and I think we've got a lot more in the shakeout to go. So, okay, precious metals update. Today, Franklin, is a really fun day to have a precious metals update.
Isn't it, though?
So why don't you tell us what's going on in the market and what it means and what we can expect?
Well, you know, we in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of up and down in gold, although the bottoms have always been higher and the tops always have been higher, which is, of course, an uptrend. But there have been some really scary drops, and the odd thing about that was that silver refused to go along with gold. Silver just kept on adding, and has made a tremendous lunge from, in the last couple of months, from $11 up to $13.50 today. What is really significant, there are two really significant things that have happened in the last 2 days. The first is, if you take a ruler and draw a downtrend line from the March high at $1,003 over to the top at about $980 in July, you get a downtrend, an established downtrend line. And this week, in the last 2 days, gold has broken above that downtrend line. Now, you don't know that is as significant as it seems until it's confirmed, and the only way it's confirmed is by moving higher. But it certainly does tell us that the direction of gold is up, even though we are sort of ripe for a correction right now. The silver touched through its 200-day moving average. 200-day moving average, you calculate by taking the average of the last 200 days price, and then the next day you drop off the oldest date and pick up the next. And it is significant because in bull markets, a market normally stays above that 200-day moving average. Silver went below that 200-day moving average last August, and so it's done all of this work getting back up to that. Also, silver's formed a giant saucer shape on the chart, and if you look at the rim of that saucer, that's where the breakout occurs. Well, silver's up at the rim of that chart now, at the rim of that saucer now. So we've got a point where we're sort of liable for a correction, and if we get a lot of good movement strength in the stock market, that might pull strength away from gold. The passage of the stimulus bill, depending on how people understand it, could also be, you know, a case of buy the news and sell the rumor sort of thing, where gold will take will lose luster for a while, but it won't be long. It'll be a modest correction, and then it'll take off again.
One of the things about, this time last year, you would hear so much debate about whether or not gold and silver could perform as alternative currencies, and a lot of debate and a lot of insecurity around that issue. And what I spend a lot of time watching how gold does in other currencies and against other sovereign bonds. And what we're seeing all around the world is there is no such thing as a safe haven in terms of another fiat currency.
Correct.
I mean, if you look at how Swiss francs have performed, it's been very disappointing. But if you look at gold in every currency around the world, I mean, the dollar and the yen have performed miraculously. But other than that, you know, gold, when been measured in almost every currency around the world. And I think it's, my impression is it's convinced a lot of people that gold and silver can be expected to probably behave the way that you and I expect it to behave. So I think there's much more consensus around what it is and how to use it in the, as an asset.
Right, and more people recognize, they're what I call the realizers. They're the people out on the edge of the curve who realize before other people do what's happening. And when you see the price of gold rising, what it says to me is, well, there are more realizers who are waking up to what's going on.
Right. Okay, so one of the things I asked you to do tonight, Franklin, was I know you get the same questions over and over again, frequently asked questions, and so do I. And so I thought if in one night we could just walk through all the different questions, we'd have it in one place. And then I know a lot of people that in my network like to listen to it again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way they won't have to call you and ask you again and again. Anyway, so I thought I'd just go through some of these questions. Now, one of the questions I always get is why does Franklin recommend buying more silver than gold? So maybe you could walk us through, if somebody comes in to make a purchase, and let's just pick a mythical person, and let's say they just want to purchase $10,000 and they've never purchased gold and silver before.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to recommend in terms of gold versus silver, and what kind of silver and what kind of gold and why?
Well, first of all, the reason I recommend more silver than gold is because gold, we can expect silver to rise faster than gold over the life of this bull market. In other words, we can expect silver from here to rise about 4.5 times as fast as gold will. Now, it doesn't get there by the same road. It's much more volatile. It wears on your nerves. But there's just an overwhelming history that points to that happening. And so from where we are right now, when I make a recommendation, it depends on what that gold-silver ratio is doing. To give your subscribers a better idea, right now the ratio is about 70 to 1. It takes about 70 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. At the end of this bull market, it will only take about 16 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. So the silver will gain significantly over gold, significantly, it will gain value significantly faster. So that's why I want to buy more silver. And it depends on what a person's risk tolerance is, but if it were somebody who came to me and said, I want to buy $10,000 worth of gold and silver, I would say, well, right now, based on the ratio, I would put 70% of that into silver and 30% in gold. And part of that is because what I'm anticipating doing a little later is to swap from silver into gold, and we end up ending up with much more gold than we would have if we just bought gold and sat on it in the meantime. See, one of the biggest problems that I have with gold and silver and that every investor has is it doesn't pay a dividend.
Right.
It doesn't pay interest. So the usual strategy is, okay, I'll go buy some gold as a hedge against dollar loss and so forth, and I'll wait for the price to rise. Well, that's fine. That will work. But what if you could make two or three or four swaps between silver and gold in the course of that time and increase the number of ounces you've got by 75 or 100%?
Right.
And that's our goal. We want to end up with as many ounces as we can. As far as what form to buy it in, I always think that you're better off with coins. Remember, we're talking about physical gold and silver, and that is going to be the physical gold and silver that you yourself take delivery of. You're going to hold it yourself. You're going to be responsible for safekeeping yourself. And in that case, the best thing to buy is coins. Why coins? Because it's an ancient technology that works. It's just that simple. I mean, if you've seen one Krugerrand, you know what every other one looks like. And it's a known weight and fineness of gold and or silver. And so it's a lot, it's just a lot easier to trade than buying bullion bars. And you don't really save much money normally buying, say, gold bullion versus gold coins. Also, the gold bullion is not as well recognized. Now, in the last 6 months or so, we haven't had a normal market. And at times, the premiums on gold coins, that is the amount you had to pay to get a gold coin above the gold price, was so high that we did recommend bullion. But you're confusing me here,
because I thought, when I first got into this world, I thought bullion meant bars. And then somebody said, no, bullion means it's not a numismatic.
Right. Bullion means that the item is just traded for its silver or gold value. It's just a weight question. Does it have a certain weight? I'm using kind of technical jargon, but when we say bullion, what we mean when we talk about gold, we usually mean little wafers, gold wafers, and you can get a 1 ounce wafer, you can get a 10 ounce bar, you can get a kilo bar for that matter, which is 32 ounces. And I normally have stayed away from those over the years because, first of all, they weren't any less expensive than gold coins, and secondly, they weren't as widely recognized and easy to trade. But when the premium, when the difference in the price of these coins got to be $50, $60, $70 difference, in other words, when you got an ounce of gold in the form of a bullion wafer for $70 less, well, that's very significant, you know. And if you're buying $100,000 worth, it's a huge amount.
Right.
So those premiums are coming back to normal now, so that there's not that big a gain by buying the bullion wafers, and so we're going back to the coins, which is where I'd rather be anyway. As far as the silver is concerned, that's been an even bigger problem in the last 6 months because silver just disappeared from the market. You know, your subscribers need to understand that the supply chain in silver and gold, physical silver and gold, is very, very thin.
Right.
And so it just dried up. Last September and October, the premiums on all the different forms of silver just went skyrocketing, and some of them disappeared altogether and haven't come back yet. The 100-ounce bars and 10-ounce bars, they're just not. They're not available.
Now, you tend to recommend, depending on the price, is something called junk silver. Could you explain what that is?
That's the dimes, quarters, and halves that the United States used to mint before 1965. They're called 90% coin because they're 90% by weight. And a $1,000 bag of that is a $1,000 face value bag, like 10,000 dimes or 4,000 quarters or 2,000 half, would contain 715 ounces of silver. And for the last 10 years, that's been by far the cheapest way to buy silver. And there's another advantage to it, and that is everybody knows what it is. And almost everybody, or certainly there are zillions of books out there that explain that those coins before 1965 are 90% silver. So it's the most divisible, it's the most widely recognized, it's the most widely traded form of physical silver in the United States. And so that's why we would direct people into those coins. The problem is that the premium went up way, way high on them last fall. They got up to about a 25% premium, which is huge. In other words, for every dollars worth of silver you bought, you had to pay $1.25 to get it in the form of silver coin. So we switched. We started looking around for other forms, and there is a pretty large market in one-ounce silver coins that are privately minted, and there are a number of different companies that make them, but they say on their face that they're 1 ounce of silver. And that's pretty close to the 90% coin. It's, you know, it's a bigger number, it's a bigger unit, but they were less expensive, and so we've recommended those. But what we try to do is always stick with the lowest premium, you know, the lowest cost per ounce we can get, because we know this is true. Over the course of a bull market, premium always disappears. Always disappears. So what that means is that at the top of the market, those extra dollars that you put in to buy American Eagle silver coins or American Eagle gold coins will not come back to you when you sell.
Right.
So, again, it's just, you know, I mean, you might call it the Walmart mentality, but we've just found that it pays off over time to pay the least cost per ounce you
now,
can pay.
Now, one of the things that amazed me when I first started to buy gold and silver was I discovered it came in the mail. And I couldn't believe you were going to send me 50 pounds of silver in the mail.
Well, it's true. It's actually one of the safest ways to send it. We ship some by Federal Express now, and a lot of gold is shipped by Federal Express. But registered mail, believe it or not, for all the bad things that you hear about the post office, they almost never lose a package, not a registered mail package, because at every step in its transfer, somebody has to sign for it. And, of course, it's completely insured. So that's the way it comes, through the mail.
So it'll just come through the mail. Okay. Yeah. Now we talked about coins that have a little premium to the melt value. What are the coins that have big premiums to melt value?
Well, primarily numismatic or collector's coins, and those are generally sold as the $20 gold pieces that were minted before 1935. And they have varying markups on them, but they'll run up to about 45% over their gold content. And those are generally sold by what used to be called boiler room operations, where you've got a lot of salesmen in a room with Watts lines, you know, long-distance lines, who are calling, trying to sell people these coins. And they pay those people about a 25% commission on those coins, versus if you look at bullion-type coins, anywhere from a 3.5% to 1.5% commission. So there's a huge difference. And the fact is, I've done the studies, and over the last 8 years, those numismatic coins have not outperform bullion, which is the claim that the salesmen make for them,
right,
that they'll rise faster than gold. They don't. In fact, they've lost premium until just the last few months, when we had all the confusion of the last few months. And over the long term, they will not keep that. They won't keep that premium. Another way that they use to sell those coins is they tell you, well, these are exempt from government confiscation. Well, so is your Chevrolet.
Right.
You know, it's nothing. The government is not planning on confiscating anything that we know of. The parallels between 1934 and today simply don't exist. I mean, their gold plays no significant part in the monetary system, and back then it was 35% of the reserves of the banks. The government doesn't need to confiscate gold in order to engage in inflation. They can do that quite well through the Federal Reserve. They can create all the money they want without regard to having any gold base to build it on. And the whole world has changed since then. The institutional framework is different. So, you know, I tell people there's about...
It doesn't warrant a 45% premium.
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't buy you anything.
Right. Now, If you get an order, do you have to report that sale to the government? Is there a currency transaction report that has to be made?
No. That's another myth that the people who sell numismatic coins agitate. We don't have to report any purchases to the government. The only time that reporting kicks in is when someone tries to pay us in cash. And for some reason, people are paranoid, I think in large part because of the sales propaganda, that people are paranoid about having the government know that they've got gold and silver. There's no report that has to be made. The only time the report kicks in is when there's a cash instrument that's used in the purchase, like, for instance, more than $10,000 in cash. And cash does not only mean green paper money with pictures of dead presidents. Cash also means cashier's check,
mm-hmm,
money order. Those things are cash as well. And the way we stay out of that is we simply do not do business for cash or any cash instruments in any 12-month period with any one person. So we just don't get into that. But it's not a concern. I just don't think it's anything that a person ought to worry about.
Now, if someone comes in and orders coins from you for the first time or from any dealer, how do they know they're really, they make the order, they wire in the money, how do they know they're really going to get the coins?
Well, they don't. They have to know that the people that they deal with are reliable and reputable. One of the things that you can do, believe it or not, is check with the Better Business Bureau. Another good indicator is how long have these people been in business. If they started in business last December, there may be a chance that you want to be a little more careful doing business with them.
Right.
But you don't stay in business by not not delivering what you're supposed to deliver.
Right. What is premium versus commission?
Well, the premium is the total amount that you pay above the gold or silver value of the item.
Okay, so the spot rate closed. Where did gold close right today?
Gold today closed at $948.20, and you would have paid for Krugerrands, you would have paid, or American Eagles, you would have paid about $1,030.
Okay, so that 30 plus 5180, so 8180 is the premium.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The whole thing is the premium. Of that premium, depending on the amount you buy, anywhere from 3.5% to 2.5% is going to be commission. Not 2.5% of the premium, but
of the whole order.
2.5 points of the whole thing. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the commission, and then the rest is going to be the market premium attributed to the coin.
Right. See, people call and they say, well, the price of gold is $948. Why are you charging me $1,038 for this coin? And the answer is because the market has placed a large premium on the coin. It's not us doing it. We're still charging the same thing we always charged. And that's what happened in the last 6 months. The supply chain dried up, and everybody who had material just raised the price on it.
Now, so I order my coins. I get them. Let's say I get 50% out of 10,000. How much? You had me buy 7,000
in silver.
7,000 in silver. Okay. How many pounds is that?
Oh, that's going to be about 22 pounds or so.
22 pounds of silver. Okay. So I got 22 pounds of silver. And how much is my weight in gold for 3,000?
You're going to get about 3 ounces.
So I got to get 3 coins.
Mm-hmm.
So I have 3 gold coins, which I could hide anywhere, and I got 22 pounds of silver.
And it's not as drastic as it sounds.
Well, you don't live in a studio apartment, you know. So.
Well, but again, if you're, you know, if you live in a studio apartment, let's take that for an example. You stand in front of your kitchen sink. There's a little inset right there where your toes go when you're standing in the sink, and you can pry that kick plate off, and underneath the cabinet there's enough room to store, you know, probably $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of silver.
Right.
And I think that's the if you want to keep it in a bank, fine. Personally, I don't like trusting banks with anything. But if you're going to keep it for yourself, you have to be real careful about where you put it, and you have to think, if I were coming in to break into this apartment, where would I look first if I had 10 minutes to look? And the places like that, hidden places behind the wall, or a false bottom in a piece of furniture, that sort of thing, it's not the average burglar is not going to find that.
Now, when someone buys coins from you or from a dealer, do they have to set up an account, like a brokerage account?
No, we treat everything as on an order by order basis. And the main thing they need to understand, whether they deal with me or with anybody else, is that when they call a dealer up and they say, I want to buy $10,000 worth of gold, you can't change your mind. It's just like ordering 100 shares of IBM from a stockbroker. You can't call him back 3 days later and say, you know, this stuff went down. I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, but people try.
Oh, yeah, they try.
Can I pay with a credit card?
No. That's the credit card companies don't like that, and it just doesn't work. We don't have the facility to do that, and I don't think there may be some company that does it, but I don't know of them.
Okay, so how do I pay?
Well, if you want to get your order very fast, then you pay with a bank wire, and as soon as we receive the funds, either that day or the next day, we ship. And it will take from 2 to 14 days to reach you once we put it in the mail or give it to FedEx. We don't have control over that. But if you pay with a check, we allow 2 weeks for the check to clear, and then we ship to you. So it's about 30 days to complete the order.
And if I don't have $10,000, if I just have a little bit of money, What can I do?
You know, the best thing you can do, and I'm really proud of this, we have a program called the Monthly Acquisition Plan.
I know, because I'm in it.
Right. But if you have less than $1,500 to spend, the best thing to do is to get on that plan. It doesn't require you to buy every month. We send a reminder at the beginning of the month, and you can invest any amount from $100 up. In effect, what it does is it gives you a way to have a gold and silver savings account. And then we actually ship those purchases out every month. And as long as your payment reaches us by the 15th, and we know you want to invest that month, and we buy something for you. If you don't send us a payment by the 15th, then we assume you don't want to buy, and we move on.
Okay, well, I've been in the map for a long time, and I know it's amazing how much you can accumulate just putting in $100 a month. You just have to be faithful. Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's really strange. We have a lot of customers on that program that have done $100 a month for literally 15 years, and then we've got some who do, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a month.
Right.
So, It just gives them a regular way to buy.
Right. It's a way of averaging in, too.
Right.
Now, you have something. I put a link to it up on the blog called The Ten Commandments of I think, buying silver and gold. And I'd love you to just run through the key ones because I think they're very, very valuable to hear.
Well, there are several of them that have to do with making sure that you always get the most gold and silver for your money. One of those is always buy bullion-type coins and not numismatics. Numismatics are for fun. They're for collecting, but bullion-type coins are for investing. Another one is don't ever go from a low-premium coin into a high-premium coin, because when you do that, you're getting less gold or silver for your money. And I'm trying to think. We've been through.
Never, ever break the law.
Oh, yes. Well, I've just touched on that twice, but yes, never try to break the law. And, you know, people don't understand. They get this thing about the government not knowing about their buying gold and silver, and they do crazy stuff. And, you know, they ought to understand that if you go into a local dealer with $11,000 in cash, and you tell him you want to buy gold or silver, he's going to look at you like you sleep with the skunks, because his first assumption is that you're an agent provocateur from the government coming there trying to entrap him into doing something illegal. There's no reason to even try to do that. I mean, there's no practical advantage to trying to do that. So there's no reason to try and break the law.
One of the questions I've been getting now for years, and which goes back to this idea of the primary trend, is it too late? You know, you bought when it was in the 300s, now it's in the 900s, it's too late. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, is it too late to invest in gold and silver?
Well, I'll talk about that, but I want to make just one comment. I'm not trying to excite anybody's greed by what I'm saying. In other words, I'm just going to tell you what my guesses are about what might happen, and they are purely guesses. Bull markets, there is no rule of thumb for how high a bull market will go. It might go up 2 times. It might go up 12 times, like the stock market did from 1982 to 2000. It might go up 35 times, like silver did from 1960 to 1980. There's just no rule of thumb there. But silver started this bull market about $4, and gold started about 250. And so gold has risen not quite 4 times. Silver has risen about 3.5 times. And so there's a lot more upside. The silver probably will go up 35 times where it began. But the gold really depends on how bad the inflation becomes. Now, you know, there's a lag between putting the inflation into the system, that is increasing the money supply, and seeing the outcome on prices. And that lag is anywhere from 6 months to 24 months, and usually toward the longer end of that. So we know that the government's put in $9.5 trillion in new spending, which is almost all of it inflationary. So there's going to be a huge inflation will ensue, and it depends on how bad that is. The gold could go easily. I mean, $3,000 is really not much of a goal.
Right, and if that happens, it's important to understand in terms of purchasing power. I mean, if you measure that in terms of acres of land or gallons of gas or all sorts of stuff, it may not. You know, it certainly may not be a big increase. It may just hold you even.
Right, not as much as it sounds. And you know, one of the things that we need to think about is to get to the same inflation-adjusted level as $850, which was the high of the market in 1980, gold would have to go to about $2,200 today.
Right.
So see, that just if we just got to $2,200, which is about a tenfold rise from the bottom, we would just then be pulling even with the high in 1980.
And that's before all the printing.
Oh, certainly, yeah. But with the printing, I mean, could they drive the price of gold to $10,000 or $16,000? Yes, I believe they could. And I don't see any way that it will top out before $3,000, and I think probably the high is a lot higher than that. So the answer to your question is no, it's not by any means too late to get into the game. And also, you know, Catherine, that markets go up in three phases. They go up in three legs. The first leg is the one, I think, that topped out at $1,000. That's always the longest, slowest leg, and it always has the least rise. The next leg that's coming, the one that we're probably starting now, is the third leg up, which is often the wildest, longest leg of a bull market. So if we saw a fourfold increase in the first leg, we'll see at least a fourfold increase and probably, you know, twice that much in this next, in the third leg up, and then there'll be another correction and a fifth leg up, and that fifth leg is when it really goes crazy, when it goes straight up, parabolic.
Right. We'll be talking with James Turk on the Slayer Report next week, and I'll never forget seeing him present his whole analysis of how the markets go back from a bull market in financial assets to a bull market in tangible assets. And at the peak, you're at the peak of the tangible bull market, he says, when 1 ounce of gold buys the Dow.
Right.
So at the time, he said, I don't know. At that time, the Dow was at 8,000. He said, I don't know if 1 ounce of gold is going to 8,000 or the Dow is going to 500, but one way or the other, that's where you know. We've gotten some great questions from the subscribers,
mm-hmm.
and these are questions that I know you've gotten before, and in fact, we've talked about one in the Salera Report before, but I want to take at least a couple of them. One, on the securities ones, we're going to handle those with James Turk next week. One of them, of course, is a question I get a lot and have addressed on the blog, which is, is purchasing gold and silver a socially responsible investment? Is buying gold triggering more irresponsible mining? And so is this an ethical thing to do? So I have a whole speech on that, but I kick it to you because I'd love to get your thoughts.
Well, I don't see how it's ethical to immolate yourself, you know, to sacrifice yourself in favor of the fiat money system. I mean, you're the one that made the point, and I think it's the best answer to this I've heard. The fiat money system has destroyed more lives and more environment and done more damage than gold and silver have done since the beginning of time.
Right.
So that's, you know, I noticed in National Geographic a couple of months ago, there was a hit piece on gold, and I thought, this is, you know, it's ridiculous. Yes, there are problems with gold mining, but generally speaking, especially in North America and in most of the developed world, gold miners have really been restricted about to what they can do, and they're very strictly required to put back the landscape after they end it. But they're not really any worse than any other kind of mining. You know,
right.
they have to be careful what they do to the environment.
Right. I must say I have found whole segments of the mining industry who are wholly insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I come back to, and I have a piece up on the blog, it's a letter to Michael Mazur, who's a retired mining engineer, and basically what I said is the same thing. Fiat currency is the primary financial cause of environmental damage, because what it does is it empowers a few people to just behave in irresponsible ways for centuries without accountability and to get away with it. And until we address that, you can't change anything. And so I believe that group of people is using silver and gold to centralize control of the financial system. And so the most socially responsible investment you can make on the planet is to decentralize the ownership and control of silver and gold.
Right.
So
exactly.
And as you do it, you also protect your family. So you're kind of protecting everyone. Another thing that's come up, and I think it's one of the reasons it's come up, Franklin, is we have several states. We have Indiana, New Hampshire, now Colorado, introducing state legislation to set up electronic mechanisms to use gold as a payment mechanism and precious metals as a payment mechanism. And so there's more and more thought of, could we go to using gold as a reserve currency? And one of the questions we've got is, you know, could such a system work given there's a little bit of gold and over 6 billion people?
Well, it worked for about 4,000 years, so I think it would work today. I hear that question, and it's usually put in another way. Is there enough gold and silver to work as money? And the answer to that is yes. It's just that the price of silver and gold is so undervalued now that it's very, very difficult for us to appreciate how undervalued it is. But especially with the payment means like James Turk's gold money, it's every bit as convenient to use as the fiat money system. Yeah, it can happen. And, you've touched on these state laws, and I have to tell you that you've gotten into the never-never land of the legal world, because we have this constitutional right to gold and silver money, and we've got a statutory right, we've got a precedential right, we've got a common law right, and yet we use this other stuff. And this is the reason that we're in the terrible crisis that we're in now, is that we have substituted privately created credit money for public money, which
right.
was gold and silver.
Right.
And we're paying the price. Every one of us is paying the price.
Well, with that, Franklin, I want to thank you so much for this update. We'll be back next month. Because the R network just has an unending appetite for information about what's going on with precious metals. Before we go on to let's go to the movies, anything else you want to say in closing?
I think that your subscribers really need to pay close attention to the market now. If they're planning on buying, the next few days will either offer them an opportunity to buy at lower prices if we get a correction after that bill is signed, or if you see gold go up through $1,000, stop waiting. Go ahead
right.
and do it.
Right. You need to. I think that's good advice. Okay. One of the things I've been talking with Franklin and some of my colleagues at Solari today was about the change that I went through between 1998 and 2009. I remember sitting and talking to one of my attorneys and saying, you know, all my life I've worked for big corporations, and now I need to stop working for corporations and governments, and I need to work for people. And she looked at me and she said, good luck. And I just made a little chart of all the different aspects of my life and how, whether it was where I banked or what I purchased or who I donated to or what I invested in or who I associated with, my whole life was wrapped up around big corporations and sort of essentially the people on Wall Street and Washington who are kind of running things. And now my life has completely changed, and there's 3 or 4 degrees of separation between me and my financial transactions and my sort of associations and a lot of my data and any corporation. My life has become, I think you called it, Franklin, people-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things I think about is if it took me, I don't know how long it took you and your family to make this change from corporate to people-centric.
A long time.
A long time. So if it took me, if it took me 8 to 10 years to do it and really get comfortable and enjoying it, given what we're looking at in the stimulus package and the center cannot hold, what is it that we can teach everyone else about how to make that change to a much more decentralized, much more diversified, people-centric world in a way that is fun? And so the reason I wanted everyone to watch Trading Places is I think it has a couple of very important lessons for us about how we can move on down the road and adapt and adjust to this this whole new world, as Franklin described, this primary trend we're now into a world of that's going to be much more, if we're going to survive happily, is much more people-centric. Trading Places is the story of Dan Aykroyd plays a young up-and-coming professional, head of the firm for two partners, two wealthy, prestigious Philadelphia partners who run a commodity firm. And Eddie Murphy is kind of a street hustler. And the brothers decide to make a bet and switch Eddie Murphy out of the street and into the presidency of the commodity firm, and Dan Aykroyd back into the street. So they take somebody who's been living in the most privileged lifestyle and put them out on the street. It's not unlike what happened to me, and bring this street hustler into the top of the corporate elite. And their reason for making the bet is to see whether genes will win out, or it's really privilege that will win out. So they make this bet. Well, it doesn't. By about two-thirds of the way through the movie, Eddie Murphy figures out what's really going on and gets with Dan Aykroyd, who's now gotten a taste of what life on the street is like, and they get together and they decide to turn the tables on the brothers who own the commodities firm, and they end up with all the money in the. And the brothers end up broke. And how do I describe the lessons? First, I want to tell you, I first saw this movie. I was a vice president at Dillon Reed on Wall Street, and the firm had just committed to go into new offices up on Madison Avenue, and 35% of the revenues and a chunk of the profits of the firm came from the department I was in. And the head of the department decided to move, literally, the department. He cut a deal with another firm to take the department and all the business and all the money and walk across the street, except he never got a commitment from me before he did. And so I ended up teamed up with the chairman of the firm in an effort to keep the business, and it was war. And the war started, and it got really bad, and on the first day I decided I needed to go see a movie, so I ended up going to see Trading Places. Anyway, so what does Trading Places tell us? As long as Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd are trying to take the system seriously and trying to, as Franklin would say, earn the treats of the tapeworm, as long as they're trying to work their way up the system and they take their sense of personal self-worth from the two brothers, they get used. But the minute they mentally realize, oh, there is no highly cultured world here. There's just the street. and you know, so one of the things they could have done is said, oh, well, this is unfair. Let's go to the police and report these guys. Well, of course, you know, they're smart enough, thanks to Eddie Murphy, not to do that. And so what do? They say, okay, well, we're in a game. We're in the street. It's, you know, the world is full of hustle. How do we turn the tables? Once they get the idea that they're on their own, but if they team up and they share their knowledge, a group of people from all these different backgrounds, because they're teamed up with the hooker played by Jamie Lee Curtis and the butler. So what am I trying to say about our situation? Part of what we need to make the switch is to stop waiting for help from Washington or Wall Street or from any of the financial centers. They can't help us. They're using us to subsidize them. And so what we need to do is first we need to unhook our minds, and then we need to literally go through our lives and put as many degrees of separation between big corporations and start building the networks we need with people, whether it's our family, our neighbors, people with businesses that are honest. We need to reconfigure so that mentally, spiritually, financially, we have as many degrees of separation between them and us, because literally, as we've seen in the last 2 years, just from looking at our 401ks, it's not safe. So Trading Places has a very important lesson, because it says stop being dependent on the game and start seeing yourself as an independent player and trying to find a way to do it which is fun and amusing for you. Because you don't have to be alone, and you don't have to be at the mercy as long as you're not dependent.
You know, Catherine, one of the lessons out of that, if you don't mind me saying
please.
Something, one of the lessons out of that was, as long as Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd gave their loyalty to that corporate world, they were had.
Right.
The corporate world had them, and they had no hope. But when they transferred their loyalty to each other, to the four people in the plot, then suddenly they were able to stand against all of that power of the corporation. But there was a transference of loyalty and a transference of, as you say, the goals of their life. They no longer took those people seriously. And that's, you know, that's one of my favorite Catherine Austin Fitz quotes, is that these people are not serious.
They're not.
They're not serious.
They're
people.
Not serious. But I'll tell you something. It's a huge I've made that adjustment. It's not an inconsequential adjustment, but it's the adjustment we have to make. And the opportunity is, if we can organize across these different, you know, areas and knowledge and whatever, that we are many, they are few. We have the knowledge. So I'm hopeful. Okay. Well, Franklin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kat.
This has been terrific. As I said, next week we've got James Turk. We're going to be going into some of the precious metals security questions with James, because he's got his fabulous newsletter that covers that. We'll be talking about digital gold. And then the next will be 2 weeks after that with John Rubino, his great book on clean money and investing in the green technology. So until then... thank you so much again for being part of the Solari Report. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.